Welcome to Focus on Food. My name is Adrian Moss, and in this program we talk to Don Shea, Director of Commercial and Industrial Marketing at Tyco Intercated Security, about their view of the US Food Safety Modernization Act and the recent Food Defense Strategy Exchange meeting. Who are Tyco Integrated Securities, and how did they get involved in the food industry?
Well, we're the North American commercial security arm of Tyco. Tyco's a $10 billion global leader in fire protection and security services. And within North America, we provide security and business optimization services to over 500,000 customers, ranging from global Fortune 500 companies and all their global locations down to even a business with a single location. And in terms of how we got involved in the food industry, you know, the food supply chain is a very critical part of the infrastructure of, the U.S. or really of any nation. And it's been recognized as an area that needs to be protected from intentional adulteration. And that's where our focus is in intentional adulteration, or what we call food defense. And for your listeners, from a definitional perspective, a lot of people think about food safety, which is unintentional adulteration, and food defense is intentional adulteration. So that's really our focus is on the food defense side.
And recently, Tyco organized and hosted the Food Defense Strategy Exchange meeting. And what exactly is that, and who actually attends?
Well, you know, the Food Defense Strategy Exchange is one that we organized actually about 4 years ago. Because at that time, and really quite frankly, even now, food defense is kind of a new and emerging discipline. And so we saw a need in talking to our customers for like a forum for an exchange of ideas and strategies to better protect this large food supply chain that we're a part of. And so we've bring together really thought leaders from the industry, you know, food and beverage companies, from the regulators, from academics, from suppliers even, to kind of exchange ideas on what is the best practices on how to really prevent intentional adulteration.
And in terms of the event itself, the format is roundtables or presentations and workshops. What actually happens when these people get together, and roughly how many people would be in the audience?
It's grown over the years. The last one was happened this last April, and we probably had maybe around 80 people in the audience. And they come together from all the various aspects I talked about. And the reason they come is really because we aim to kind of cover all the critical aspects of food defense. So we'll cover issues like regulation. And in the U.S., the Food Safety Modernization Act is something that's being rolled out and is discussed. We talk about even global issues and legal aspects. Brand reputation, which is critical, and technology, and of course, we've been privileged, Adrian, to have you come speak from the UK, because brand reputation and the impact of social media, although at the face of it, say, what does that have to do with food defense? But really, food defense is really about protecting the food supply, and the company's focus and motivation for food defense is really to protect their brand first and foremost. And so it includes panel discussions, includes presentations, just interactive opportunities to kind of just a forum to discuss ideas.
And in terms of the event itself, is it invitation only, or is it public opportunity to come?
It is really by invitation only. These are all very serious leaders of their corporations. They want to associate and exchange ideas with people that are focused on food defense. And so we do want to make it a forum that really benefits the leaders in this industry, because they're really at the forefront of paving new paths in food defense.
And in terms of the materials, because I know, having kindly been invited to present there by yourselves, that it was being videoed and there were various panel sessions, but also the main presentations. Are those videos and resources, again, available to people within the general industry and other people who might be interested?
All the materials are obviously available to those that are invited to the event. We do have a LinkedIn group called Food Defense Strategy Exchange, which is also by invitation only, that can be available to a broader audience. And then there are some pieces of information that we do provide to the general public as a service to the general public. But there are some, a lot of it is really focused on food defense issues, and it was shared with the intent of providing benefit to those that are focused on food defense. That's why we've kind of kept it within a invitation-only group, if you will, for the majority of the content.
I do know from one of the presenters, I think it was a lady from Kerry Foods, was talking about how in this platform-type approach, it's important for those organizations that may have larger resources, the sort of global mega brands, if I can call them that, to actually share their learning and experience, because it was very impressive to see how some organizations had probably woken up to this whole area after the tragedy of 9/11 and said, look, we've got to look at this whole thing, and it's more than just gates, guns and guards, it's the infrastructure, it's employees, it's a whole series of intentional, as you say, as opposed to accidental tampering with the food chain. And so certainly an awful lot of practical experience that can be shared within those sort of panel sessions, especially with larger organizations that maybe started their journey earlier than others have done so.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you made a really good point, Adrian, is really the value of sharing the information with even smaller companies that need to protect their food supply chain is very important, because as the saying goes, you know, the chain is as strong as the weakest link. And so as you saw at our conference, global leaders like the leaders from Frito-Lay and Kerry Foods want to share information with other people who are serious about food defense, because it's important that the whole supply chain be protected. And just to maybe give you your listeners an insight into kind of the scale of the issue just within the U.S. alone, you know, we talk about the food supply chain from farm to fork. And in just the U.S. alone, there are 2 million farms. There are over 400,000 food facilities that are registered with the FDA because they process food in some shape or form. And it isn't just the domestic facilities, but there are actually more foreign facilities that are registered with the FDA than domestic, and there's over 270,000 of them. And we'll talk about FSMA later, I think, but that's a key point for your listeners in the EU, is that the protection of the food supply chain is a global issue that everyone needs to be involved in. And then it goes to the movement of the products, whether it's a truck or rail car or vessel. Just in U.S. alone, there's 9 million trucks on the road. So you can imagine the challenge of protecting food in that arena. And then there's about 1 million points of sale, whether you count grocery stores or restaurants. So the scale is enormous. The challenge is enormous. But, you know, by focusing on sharing of best practices for all food defense practitioners, we think we can really raise the bar, if you will, to protect the food supply.
I mean, one thing, as you say there, that the presentation from the FDA at your session did mention that the FDA is now being mandated to look at foreign manufacturing facilities and also importers of food into the US, and that's a sizable percentage. 15% plus of all food is imported. I mean, I was very conscious that although people were there working in the US, as it were, who had experience of Europe, that there wasn't any sort of European or global representation. So from your understanding of working with US companies, how do you perceive the European even understanding and appreciation of what's happening over there? Have you got any insight into that?
Actually, the one before this, we did have representation from a consular general in France speak about food vigilance, if you will. That's their term for food defense in France, and talk about their issues. So companies are interested in the global perspective as well. And, you know, I think it is one where all the regulators are sharing best practices and ideas about how to protect the supply chain. Because as you pointed out, you know, the supply chain is very much global. You know, you mentioned over 15% of products in the U.S. are imported, and that's true. There are actually some segments of food that are even higher, like 80% of seafood is imported into the U.S., 50% of fruits and vegetables. So the suppliers of food here in the U.S. Need to have a global perspective and do want to be abreast of all of the issues across the globe, if you will, because the food doesn't have boundaries, if you will.
Very true. In the presentation, they also did a workshop where they had a pre-release version of their Food Defense Plan Builder software tool. How did the audience actually receive that, and what was their thoughts on how the workshop worked and the tool and its value to them in planning their food defense?
You know, I think it was very well received. You know, this was really an initiative by the Food and Drug Administration here in the U.S. to provide, in partnership with the industry, you know, a tool that they could use to really build a food defense plan. You know, it was an interactive session, a lot of engagement by the food industry participants in this tool, because it really helped bring together all the various learnings and aspects of food defense into one software tool. It starts with helping them identify vulnerabilities, you know, in the food supply chain, and then they use online integration with the Food Defense Mitigation Strategies database that the FDA has. And so by identifying a particular vulnerability, they can then suggest specific mitigation strategies that companies can use to protect against that particular vulnerability. And, you know, food defense can be different depending on which process step you have. And so it really covers different areas. You know, for example, just one example might be, you know, they've identified a mixing area as a critical node, if you will, for food defense, because if a contaminant is put into a mixing area, it can adulterate a large batch. So there are specific mitigation strategies that may be suggested for that step alone versus bulk liquid holding, for example. So it's a very comprehensive tool. It does, as you go through it, result into a specific action plan that the companies can take to build an effective food defense plan. And so I think it was well received. I know the FDA is going through workshops around the country and internationally to expose companies to this tool. And I think it's a valuable contribution by the FDA in that respect.
I know that the FDA are planning some workshops in Germany and visiting the FSA in the UK to have a meeting. Tyco's been working with food and beverage organisations for a good few years now in this whole area. From your understanding of it, what would you share as being the key areas that organizations in Europe should be considering as important things to look at as exporters of food to the US?
For the EU businesses, as I'm sure a lot of them would be exporters into the US, the first point to note is that the Food Safety Modernization Act does specifically require that the standards for food suppliers into the U.S. are going to be equal to the standards that they require of domestic suppliers in the U.S. So there will be supplier verification requirements that any EU business wishing to export into U.S. must comply with. So I think that's point number one. And I think the second point is really then, you know, how can we then protect our business against food adulteration? And I would advise that there are maybe four aspects to proactive food defense, what we call the four A's of a proactive food defense program, that allows companies to really deliver the actionable intelligence they need to protect their brand. And the four A's are to assess, to access, alert, and audit. And in terms of assessment, it's really about the doing that comprehensive vulnerability assessment that the FDA strongly suggests and, quite frankly, requires now to do, to really look at all the various aspects that might be potentials for food adulteration. And there are four areas that the FDA suggests are particularly vulnerable, and I would probably advise to companies to start with that. And the four areas that they talk about that are common across any food category in terms of vulnerability, a particular vulnerability is in, the first one is in around the coating, mixing, grinding, and rework processes. And the reason there is really because there is a potential for even distribution of a contaminant that can then affect the large batch. So I would focus on that. The second area is really any ingredient step, whether it's ingredient staging, preparation, or ingredient addition, because it's an open process step that has access to the product stream. So I would suggest companies to look at that aspect of that. Bulk liquid receiving and loading is another area because of the high probability of uniform mixing of that contaminant. And lastly, bulk liquid storage or even non-bulk liquid storage holding tanks. One, there's, these tanks are agitated, so that, of course, would promote distribution of contaminant. And a lot of them are in isolated areas, so they're probably not monitored actively. So that's kind of the assess piece. You know, the second one is really around access. Companies should pay particular attention to access to some of these critical control points that we just talked about. I think most companies do a good job of protecting against the front door, someone coming in the front door. They might have visitor badges, they might have checking sign-in and those kind of things. But as I walk around a lot of facilities, here in the U.S. and I assume in Europe as well, there's a lot of contractors, logistics providers, visitors that really, quite frankly, have relatively free reign within the facility. And so to protect against those, the requirement is really to really have only those that are authorized to be in that area to have access to those areas. And that's kind of easier said than done because a lot of the plants are wide open facilities and you can't really protect with a door, for example, when you're doing some mixing area. But there are some technologies that companies can take advantage of using RFID technologies where you can map out a virtual hot zone, if you will, around those areas. And only those with that authority for that area would have access, and then those without might would present an immediate alert that then you can kind of decide what needs to be happening. You know, they could be okay, the guy from finance is walking through and checking up on doing something, but it may not be okay. And so that's a way, proactive way of defending against it from an access perspective. The third is alert, and just like I mentioned there, alert in terms of someone coming into a critical control point like that, could be across the whole supply chain. As I mentioned, you know, the supply chain, the most vulnerable part really is really the movement of products. Unfortunately, in the U.S., for 3 years running, cargo theft of food and beverage has become the single largest industry for cargo theft. And, you know, something is stolen and then it's resold into this legitimate supply chain. Your brand is on it. Who knows what has happened between the time it's stolen and brought back into the supply chain. And ultimately, it's a company's brand. So you need to have some proactive measures to protect against supply chain. And there are certainly GPS and even truck remote truck control solutions that will actually stop a truck if it's off the route, and that can then protect against that. And then lastly, it's around audit. You need to know whether companies are, that your employees are doing exactly what you expect them to do, even though you might have specific compliance standards that you expect them to follow. Today, with remote video audit technology, you can randomly sample specific audit points and see if employees are following those particular areas. Companies that have deployed this technology have actually seen that although their in-plant audit scores, you know, when someone comes in with a clipboard and checks whether you've passed an audit, well, employees kind of know what to pass, what they're looking for, and they pass the audit at that point in time. But what about it when the auditor has left? And when they deploy this technology, companies have found maybe although their implant audit scores were 100% passing on all their plants, when they do it, they see maybe a wide variation, 50 to 80 to 90% compliance. And that's obviously a risk. But through training, you have a video clip of where they didn't pass. You train the employee to help them pass the audit. Companies have, over a 90-day period, brought their compliance into 95 to 99% compliance. And now you know all your employees are following the procedures, not just guessing. So, these four A's, assess, access, alert, and audit are really some disciplines, I think, that would be worthwhile to follow to really have a proactive food defense program.
You've mentioned going through the four A's and also the tool from the Food Defense Plan Builder tool. In terms of potentially being able to help the European-based small and medium food producers and food manufacturers and exporters to the States, what sort of resources is Tyco able to put online that would maybe help them about the 4As and things like that?
Well, sure. The Food Defense Plan Builder software tool is freely available to anybody, so that can be downloaded from the FDA site. So I would certainly suggest that. In terms of companies exporting to the U.S., Tyco is a global company, and we would be happy to assist companies that are interested in looking at the various technologies to help them protect their food supply chain in a proactive manner.
And should they contact you guys in the States or their local operation? What's the best way of plugging into all this knowledge and experience and resource that you've been building up over the last few years?
Yeah, I guess I would provide two resources. One is to just refer them to the tycois.com/food defense site. That's a site that they can look at to get some preliminary information on how about the 4As and how they can be protecting their site. And then I would certainly encourage them to call up their local Tyco or ADT facility. With Tyco, we brand ourselves in different countries with different brands. So in the UK, it is under ADT. In the US, it's under Tyco IS, but certainly just go to the tyco.com site and find your location and go to your local sales and office for your country, and we'd be happy to help.
Is there any other points you want to make?
Yeah, I think there's one point, Adrian, especially with your expertise in the social media world. I think it's very important to point out. You came and spoke to our conference and made a very strong and persuasive point that in a social media world, companies just do not have the luxury of responding in a timely fashion with something goes viral and if a product gets adulterated. So, you know, your advice to us was really to plan ahead of time with a preventive attitude of going through the social media steps and from a food defense perspective, going through from preventive control step, you know, how to protect against your brand. Because ultimately, your brand's at stake, and your listeners may not be aware of the incident of pink slime in the U.S., where it was actually a safe product, a product that was safe to eat, safe but used to kind of for hamburger and ground meat to have a better visual appearance, if you will. It went viral, and unfortunately, you know, there were people that felt it was not good or right or what have you. And when the social media impact went viral, the company unfortunately had to close down 3 or 4 plants. Other companies were not as fortunate, had to be bankrupt. And I think it was a lesson, a real life, unfortunate lesson about not planning ahead for a social media world. And I think that's a value that companies should take, is that when you're protecting against your food supply and your brand, be proactive, both on the social media aspect and in a food defense aspect, to plan ahead, because you'd be much better positioned should something already happen.